Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 42 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So, announcements this week. We are officially 2 months from the U.S. premiere date.
And I forgot to say, as we have done, I think, once before, we're split in the studio today. So if Summer's voice sounds a little bit funky, it's only because she's calling in.
I'm Skyping in from a very tiny, tiny town in Utah, and it's beautiful.
But right now, we're past 2 months. We're actually in the month, one point something month, so.
Do we have an official, like, countdown? Like, do we have a countdown on our page, don't we?
On our page, we do. Unfortunately, even though it does count the days, and that's how it knows to do, you know, I'm guessing when it gets to 1 month, under a month, it'll say, you know, 10 days, 9 days, whatever. I was a little bit surprised that when I first installed that counter, it said 3 months. And then, of course, quickly went past that. And then even though it was like 2 months and 28 days, it automatically skipped to 2 months because it's only showing whole month.
Gotcha.
So
I think once we get down to 30 days and once it's under a month, it should do by
day. Otherwise, that's a really bad counter downer.
So 2 months from the premiere day, I mean, I am less than 2 months, but we just said that.
Exactly.
I am getting closer and closer to it, and I'm getting more and more excited. I don't know. I'm really excited.
Are we planning our separate individual premiere parties?
Yes. Let's see, what will I do for myself? I'm going to darken the room.
You're stealing my thunder.
Okay, fine. Anyway, I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but I'm sure there will be some sort of appropriate snacks for me. And maybe some wine.
That's what I'm thinking.
And I'll pretend it's Rhenish. And
once we get the 1 month, we'll have another little update to see if we've changed our minds on anything.
I will still not watch it with you.
Oh, no, honey. Okay. I will not watch it with you.
You know, it's so funny. We were in line to get our book signed by Diana, and this just a couple days ago at the Sacramento signing, and so we were talking to somebody, and we'd said, oh, we have our plans. I said, oh, yeah, I'm not going to watch it with her. And they were like, oh, why not? And I was like, look, the only crying I want to hear while watching this is my own. The only heaving sobs I want to hear are my own. And everyone kind of laughed at that. So on to the next set. We officially got our Ned Gowan. I think that I'd read somewhere that he was listed previously, but this was our first.
I don't think we ever got an official announcement from Starz. But do you remember, and I think it was in the fall, I don't think it was this spring, although I could be wrong, there was a shot of someone in some part of the production office where they had the wall of people who had already been cast.
Ah, the headshot wall.
Yeah, the headshot wall. And someone was able to make out, I think, the name Bill Patterson, if not the face, and or at least part of the name. And it was speculated, we didn't know who he was playing, but I think it was himself and then the gentleman playing Father Bane. I think they were on that wall. But we never got an official announcement, which is kind of interesting because, I mean, they announced Hamish, but not Ned Gowan. And Ned Gowan is around for much longer.
But he comes in later, doesn't he?
He does, but it's before the wedding, so it's quite early on.
But Hamish you see almost right away.
Well, not until they get to
Leok. Well, once they get to Leok, is what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Ned Gowan, no spoilers, he is in more than just Outlander.
No, you're going to be seeing him a lot. He takes a break in a couple books, but he seems to always come back.
Quite a few books. Yeah. And I love that guy. Bill Patterson, if you don't know the name, you will know the face. He is, I think I read, in his 60s. And I just hope that if we are blessed with all the seasons, that he is...
He's going to have to be as prolific as Ned Gowan, let's put it that way.
Well, yeah. I mean, I mean, they can always age him, and they would have to, but because Ned is quite a bit older in other books. So it was great to see this confirmed in a nice article.
Yes. Outlander was honored as Critics' Choice Awards' most exciting new series, which we all already knew that. This is not news for us.
It's just, he could have told you that, Critics' Choice.
It's just nice that they're getting some recognition now, and it's starting to feel more and more real. It's like...
And, of course, Yeah.
It's like we know it's real, but with each new little media outlet that picks up on it, it's like, oh, it's really real. It's really happening.
I'm not the first person to do this because I'm a copycat in this, but I don't blame my friend. I blame stars. I actually started watching Black Sails for Black Sails. It was just nice that we saw some of the Outlander stuff surrounding it, right? But I'm not anti-power. It's just not usually the kind of show. It's still not the kind of show I would typically watch. I added it to the DVR so I could just watch it when I would watch it, just try and catch. It's just exciting to see the Outlander placements actually on TV and not just, you know, on my YouTube channel or on my phone.
This is very
I can
true.
Make that happen. I can't make the one on Stars happen. That you have to catch. So it was so exciting to see that. But I found myself, well, okay, I'll watch that. Well, this weekend I watched it and Stars, darn you, I'm hooked. So another stinking show that I have to watch that, of course, is on Stars. But yeah, Power, if you guys haven't checked it out, check it out. It's definitely different than Outlander. Completely different from Black Sails. But I think that's why it's kind of exciting, because Stars is doing all these productions that are not quite 180s from each other, but totally different
genre.
Well,
I think they're trying to reach a wide market and a larger audience.
Absolutely.
So
their originals are just blowing it out of the water. They're doing such an incredible job. It's just, no matter what I watch from them, the new shows. And they have really great, they had The Princess Bride the other night. Come on.
Yeah.
So they have great older shows, replays, I guess you could say it. But their originals are just blowing it out of the water.
So we also got a couple pictures from the Stars Instagram account. We got one shot full of cows, the Highland cows.
Yes, the kine.
The kine, if you will. They're so fluffy. They almost
look
like
so
dogs.
Jagged.
They almost
like
look
a
like a big horned dog.
I know. And the nose is so, you want to kiss that nose. It's like so big and juicy and plump and not like a steak, but like just cute, like a big dog nose. But I know it's not a dog. But the oh my goodness, they're so cute. Oh, I didn't think about it until a few days ago, but in our read-along, we've already passed the Wentworth escape, Mekranach, when they actually take the kine through the prison. And very American-born that I am, the cows that I see are the non-shaggy cows. And so I just thought for the first time, oh my gosh, if they do this, it is definitely attached to that culture. So it makes sense, not to say that it would be an easy task, but it makes sense that it would be used because it was an asset they had right there with them. When I revisited this picture, oh my gosh, it's not going to be like the jerseys that we think about, you know, walking into, or big old brown cows walking through some fortress. It's going to be these shaggy cows. If they do it, oh my gosh, it's going to be amazing.
I'm looking forward to it. We also got a picture of Sam and Katrina having lunch with a view, drinking wine, and there's, I don't know, maybe I'm imagining they're having cheese and some like crusty bread. And
he has something, are those nuts in his pocket?
Who knows? It could be I don't know what that is.
It's like a package, an open package or something. It's not a water bottle, I don't think. It's too uneven, but something red.
It's back in their puffy coats. You know, it's not it's not a true period piece production without puffy coats.
Yep, and she's got her hair going on. Her hair is down, so I'm wondering, but she's in, at least it looks like she's in the 18th century garb underneath that because of her skirt.
Of course they are, and he's got his kilt on. They're just between takes, it looks.
He's always in his kilt, but she, you know, I guess she could be in something, like have a blanket on her. She could be, you know what I'm saying? But her hair is not typically down. Except for when she's bathing.
No, that's not true. Because if you remember, when they, after the witch trial at Creedsmuir, right?
Yeah.
After the witch trial, they live rough on their way to Lallybroch.
Let's be honest. All the shots they've shown us from last year or early this year, and they had not done anything with that yet.
Well, I'm thinking positively, and that they're living rough on their way to Lallybroch. So we got another question with an answer from Meryl Davis. It was neat. This one was, I think I'd heard this before. I think this was something that was mentioned in a previous question and answer session, maybe, that they'd done about spooky occurrences that happened on location. And Meryl talked about the wind picking up during the standing stone scene, which I thought, you know, is really awesome. So it's kind of neat how things work out. Stars released a new newsletter, my favorite one yet, which is all about Sam and Sam becoming Jamie. And I think these are some of the best pictures. And Stars, if you ever listen to our podcast and you happen to be listening to this, that bottom picture of Sam and Katrina sitting together is amazing, and I would like it in full resolution so that I can put it as the background on my phone. Please and thank you.
Summer doesn't care about the rest of the fandom. She just wants it for her phone and for her iPad.
Hey, look, if you don't ask, they will never say yes or no. So I am no worse off without asking. But this was a good newsletter, I thought. And I thought, yeah, I mean, it echoes a lot of the stuff we've already heard. And then there's also some new information. I didn't know that he was a fencing instructor.
Hello.
That was new to me. I mean, he just got Hello. Exponentially hotter.
Oh, stop it now.
I'm just saying. Hotter.
No, stop it now.
Okay.
Homeboy does not need no help.
Not with fencing.
That's pretty crazy. So if I want fencing lessons, I know whom to call.
Yeah, I bet he's very expensive. We got a new speaking Outlander lesson, and this week was Slanchava.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
repeated just like that, like a sailor.
Exactly.
That was very sailory, Summer.
Look, I was just trying to do Agav Jackson.
Actually, what am I saying? Sailor. That was very piratey. Slanchavar.
Slanchava. I didn't say var.
I know you did it, but it sounded like a pirate.
I'm not a pirate. And I would like to say that I think this is the first Speaking Outlander video that was only Agav.
I think you're right.
He was the only one there. I didn't see any other cast members, so he's moving up in the ranks, our Agav.
And I have to say thank you, Summer. I mean, believe me, I am the last person on Earth to get every single thing in Gaelic right. But you did not hesitate. You have his name down pat, girl.
Well, I feel like I've said it enough, and I hear it
She's
in my
like,
head.
That's the one I can do. Shut up.
I'm like, it's the only one I can do. Diana shared on her Facebook page that the Space Between audiobook is narrated by our own Davina Porter, which is lovely. I like continuity in my stories, and I enjoy that they are continuing to use her for all of the stories.
And it makes sense that the John Gray novels are not narrated by her because it's a man's point of view. Although, I mean, come on. Outlander is the only book that is 100% from Claire's point of view. Davina would do fine no matter what she's reading. However, I can totally understand why she may not be the first thought of for those, since it is an entirely different point of view.
True. I said, I'm just saying, I'm enjoying the continuity.
I agree. If it were up to me, I would have her do everything of Diana's. It doesn't hurt my heart too much that she doesn't do everything.
There's another podcast out there hosted by Andrew. It's called Simply Scottish. He was lucky enough to have an interview with Diana while she was in Seattle for the retreat. And if you listen to that interview and that episode, you may, in fact, hear our familiar voices. He was also kind enough to include our promo. So we officially are being kind of advertised on another podcast. I mean, I'm not trying to blow smoke or nothing, but I just thought it was really cool.
It was very cool. And we heard that. I was like, wait, what? We don't sound half bad. I do the editing for ours, and I listen to ours, and you know, we try to be critical, but not too critical, because if we're too critical, you'll never have a podcast.
This is very true.
But we tried really hard to get that promo done quickly, but not too quickly, you know, not speak too quickly, because everything, the bare bones into 30 seconds, it ended up being 33 seconds, and the music, I mean, it ended up being just fine. But we shared that, and Andrew was kind enough to include that in his podcast. That was very kind of you. Thank you so much, Andrew.
And lastly, I believe we should speak a little bit about Diana's appearance in Sacramento. We were fortunate enough to get tickets to it, and actually we got online pretty early as well, so we were sitting pretty much front row, which was nice because we didn't have any heads in front of us. It was unobstructed, and it made it for me feel intimate, even though I know there was 975 people behind me. It felt really intimate to me that it was just a few of us, even though it was a very packed Crest Theater in Sacramento.
It was a lot of us, yeah. Let's do a brief synopsis of our night. So we, as Summer said, got in line. We were relatively early in the line. And got inside, were able to get very decent seats. We put all of our shots up, most of our shots up on Instagram.
The doors opened at 4:30. So at 4:30, we were in our seats inside. Like, I was like, do not pass go, do not collect $200, go straight into the theater, because they were basically general admission, meaning that it was first come, first serve on the seats. And I was like, I did not wait out line in the heat and sweat. I had sweat like rolling down my back.
Because you're in the sun.
And there was no breeze. No breeze at all.
Yeah. But once we got inside, it was like, okay, we need water. So you guys actually got water and then sat down. And then what was I doing? Oh, I had to buy the book. That's right. And to have it signed later on. And Summer and Lene had brought their own books to have signed.
But can I just say how surreal it was that, I mean, this was at a theater. Like, it's a theater that has concerts, and they do show, like, I think a film every now and again, like, previews and stuff. Can I just say how surreal it was to be at what amounted to a book signing and author discussion where people were eating popcorn and hot dogs and concessions candy and drinking soda? It was so weird.
So we had enough stuff to kind of keep us cool, plus the air conditioning helped, etc. We get inside, we're sitting down, we take a few pictures, we're just happy to finally just be out of the sun and not as sweaty, right? And the Crest Theater was beautiful, they did a great job, and Sacramento Public Library did a wonderful job for this event, and of course their entire series, Outlander series, last year was phenomenal. We're in there, and I think they start just a few minutes late. And apparently Diana had tweeted a few things or had said a few things about traffic at the airport or traffic on the road that was dire. But it was just apparently it was not a good traffic situation for travel. But she got there, and we could see them bringing in all the books, and we were getting very excited, et cetera, et cetera. So it finally starts, and Stephanie Borelli was the lovely host that evening. She took questions from readers, fans, etc. before the event, meaning you had to send them in some kind of way. And she would then go through them, and she selected a few along with her own during the event. And Stephanie looked beautiful. We learned that she is actually a very good seamstress. She made her entire dress by hand, every little bit. And she was wearing, Summer, help me on this.
It was a period dress. Beautiful red fabric. I don't know. It looked kind of like, and it could have been taffeta. I'm not sure.
The first thing Summer said when she came out or when she sat down was, good Lord, she's wearing a corset. Because you could tell it was perfectly straight.
Yeah.
Stephanie was great. I thought she asked of her own and also of the fans some very interesting questions. Diana was able to tell a lot of stuff that she has. Diana repeats a lot of the same information because, as she should, because a lot of people who go to see her, this is their first and maybe only time ever seeing her.
Well, they ask her the same questions a lot.
That's true. No, that's true. She gives the same information, but almost all of that is due to getting the same questions. So, yes, it is great when she is able to have some new questions because then we hear new things. And do you remember some of the more interesting questions or newer questions?
She talked about the shapes of the books, which I thought was really interesting. How, like, Outlander was like three triangles based on the three crescendos, basically the big moments of conflict, the three conflicts in the story.
Yes.
Dragonfly and Amber was like, she said it was a dumbbell.
Because I'm thinking of a dumbbell, but when she described the shape and how it has bookends, the bookends were the nuts, and then, or something on the end to keep the weights on,
to hold the weights,
and then the actual shape of the weight on the end was the smaller or the large climax at the beginning and end. And then it was a little bit, my heart just kind of contracted when she said there was a little bit of relative peace in the middle when they were at Lallybroch. That always gets to me, that whole Lallybroch thing. And I'm doing my own private reread of Dragonfly and Amber, and it's my favorite. So hearing her describe that and flat line, if you will, of Lallybroch, because it's the only time they don't have conflict, basically, was beautiful and sad. And so that was so nice to hear because I never heard her explain that.
The other ones were a little more difficult to explain, but
she only
told us one more. I think it was Voyager was a braided horse tail.
Where the top of it's braided and then the bottom of it is flying free.
Three stories that were interwoven, and then at the end when they all came together was basically.
Yeah, that's true. So it was braided up top, and then at the bottom all the hair was hanging together.
Yeah. But it was really, really interesting, and she did ask some good questions. There were some oldies that we've heard before, but there were some really good new ones too. After Diana posted on CompuServe about her publicity tours, like going into this, I was just like,
it was just last week or early last week or the week before.
I almost felt bad. I almost felt bad going because knowing all of the rigmarole she goes through and all the struggles and she just made it sound like it was this horrible thing. And I'm like, God, am I adding to this? And I'm like, I'm going anyway. Knowing all the things now that go on inside of her head when these days are happening, she was so gracious and just so funny and sassy. And I don't think I've ever heard her talk that sassy.
Me either. I think I've heard that nipple comment before, right? Someone asked her about one of a reader's or a fan's question that Stephanie shared. And she named the person, and I did not write the name down.
Something but about constructive criticism that she
exactly
received.
What was the most helpful piece of constructive criticism that you've received to basically make you the writer you are? And
she said she didn't think that she'd received any, and then she was like, oh.
No, she said, I don't think I've received constructive criticism.
Oh, that's true.
Which was funny. And then she said, but as far as criticism.
That her husband had put a sticky on something she'd given him, and it said there was too many nipples. Like
what? Nipples again? And she said, well, when you have three children and you're a nursing mother, they're always right there. They're always right there front and center. So she's so down to earth. I mean, yes, she is, my words, a literary goddess. I'm sorry, she is. But she is a human being and she's so down to earth. And I agree with Summer. So there was that comment. What's another one of the comments that had us almost in tears? She mentioned the beginning of Outlander and how she was thinking about the setting and everything and how she was thinking about the kilt again and the Highlands and Scotland. And then she paused and people, you know, responded, and then she said, in church.
Yeah.
And that she does quite well. Her timing is pretty darn good.
She has some shtick. She's definitely got some shtick.
Yes, she does. But along with that story, there was more that she told. Maybe not of the early days, but along those same lines.
She's highly entertaining. If you guys get a chance to go see her speak live or in any kind of public forum like that, I highly recommend you get online and go do it. So she talked for probably like an hour. And then after that, she signed 2 items from anybody who was there. And stayed basically until it was done. But we stood in line ourselves for like 45 minutes. I don't know how late she stayed, but I do know that we were there for 45 minutes and the line was still going out into the lobby. So she must have been there very, very late. We appreciate everything you do, Diana, and we really appreciate you taking all the time to be there for your fans.
One of the things that I don't remember ever hearing was that, quote, in the fullness of time, there will be a book called or entitled What Frank Knew.
But she said she doesn't know what Frank knew yet because he's very close-lipped.
Well, with each book, we learn a little bit more of what he knew. He learned very well when he worked for MI6. Mm-hmm. He was a good spy.
All right, that wraps up our announcements for this week.
And now on to our read-along. This week we are discussing chapter 38, entitled The Abbey, which always makes me think of The Sound of Music.
I always think of the line that one of the nuns sings when they're complaining about Maria. I've even heard her singing in the Abbey. The Abbey. I just think of that line and I cannot separate the two. But let's go back for just about 3 minutes ago when we were doing our microphone test.
Oh, Lord.
What did you do?
I need to preface this by saying that I just finished binge watching the entire second season of Orange is the New Black.
And she and Lene harassed me into watching it, so I'm about on episode 8 or
so. She's in the first season.
Of season 1.
But spoiler alert for those who haven't seen the second season yet, there is a reference to Outlander in the very last episode of the second season. So if you are watching, please finish it and come back. And I don't want to spoil it, but
the character really that cute. Talks really about it
is Tasty, who is literally one of my favorite characters. I think she's so awesome. Anyway, my new testing 1, 2, 3. We usually test our microphone out by saying testing 1, 2, 3.
We want to get levels.
Correct, but today I decided instead of testing, I was going to say Tasty 1, 2, 3.
And she did.
She made fun of me.
I did, and she would not quit it. We did several times.
I did. And I got a little bit more Orange is the New Black each time.
And then I made a reference of OINTV, and she's like, are you going to go nuke up in the block on this? What? Anyway, okay, that's enough.
All right, chapter 38, The Abbey.
I've even heard her sing The Abbey.
Make it
Sorry,
stop.
I'm, it's you. I can't.
I didn't.
Okay.
So is this going to be like New Voldemort?
Huh? I haven't finished that series. Stop.
No,
I never read it. I've only seen most of the
movies.
He Who
Must Not Be Named. Is this the chapter that must not be named to keep you from singing that song?
Yes.
All right, this is Voldemort. This is chapter 38, Voldemort. The Voldemort.
So, this chapter, I wrote, Outlander Party of Three arrive at the Abbey.
Well, they do. It's very accurate.
They are Outlanders. Claire notes that Jamie's slanted eyes had come from the Fraser side, and she recognized it in his paternal uncle, Abbot Alexander. Jamie has been taken away to be bathed by the monks, and Brother Ambrose is to tend to his wounds. Claire falls asleep. She's
rightfully
tired.
So. I mean, she's
has
been
she
caring.
Even slept since she? Well, I, she did a little I, bit at McGranick's.
I know, but I doubt it. He's been literally puking up blood
until she dosed
the
him.
Entire like
not
trip
the entire
across the channel.
No, they dosed him.
They dosed him, but that doesn't mean
he
ceased to be ill. It just means he was asleep when he was doing it.
He was likely not barfing when he was asleep.
I hope not. My point is,
is that she probably didn't sleep well.
Oh, that I would agree with. But I don't think he vomited while in a sleep-induced laudanum-induced sleep. Wow, who took laudanum tonight? Okay, so she wakes to the sound of Jamie screaming. And she bangs her head against a stone wall. That's not funny. It just, I didn't mean to
no,
laugh.
No, it probably hurt.
And Claire goes to him, and his shaking begins to fade. But he tells Claire, get rid of that stink. It was the smell of the lavender-scented oil that one of the monks had brought into the room. It was for the purpose of healing, whether it was for the skin or just to burn, you know, to calm, for calming purposes, or to help him sleep. We learn that Abbot Alexander's order is Benedictine, as the monk is a Franciscan. And that makes absolutely no sense.
I remember the Franciscan monk.
She's having wine, not me, but it doesn't sound like that. Okay, no, we learn that Abbot Alexander's order is Benedictine. Brother Ambrose is wearing a black robe, cassock, something. And it is, the black is of the Franciscans. Benedictines wear brown. And Claire noted that distinction, the color. So he was there, I believe, for a little bit, doing some translations or doing some copying. The monk takes away the oil and leaves the room. Claire is thanking him, and he says that he came also when he heard the screaming. She remembers the voice, hoarse and dreadful. It was Jamie's scream. The monk tells her he's on his way to take his shift at the perpetual adoration of the Blessed Sacrament. Apparently, Jamie was offered caudle for breakfast, and he turned it down. I think I would have two. According to Merriam-Webster, caudle is a drink, as for invalids, usually of warm ale or wine mixed with bread or gruel, eggs, sugar, and spices.
No,
wine together? Summer.
I mean,
I can't. Gruel I could do, but eggs and wine?
No, I guess if you
put the wine in with the eggs as you like make scrambled eggs, but that's not gruel. Like, that's, maybe it wouldn't, I don't
wouldn't
know.
It just makes me think of like, wouldn't it like,
clot? No, not clot.
Caudle
is it.
Right, but isn't that what it's called? Like when milk coddles, like it gets chunky?
Curdles?
Curdles, that's the word. Curdles. Wouldn't it curdle?
Maybe nobody would coddle. Apparently. And Jamie just did not want to be part of that.
Dude, like anytime I ever see anyone drinking raw eggs in some movie where they're
these
all like fitness
cooked,
experts,
but
still. Ew, cooked is even worse. Could you imagine like swallowing like
cooked eggs?
Chunky eggs in the middle of wine and everything
it's a gruel. It's not going to be a glass of wine with eggs thrown in. I mean, that's just nastiness.
I'm just saying.
But if anyone has a modern day or authentic whatever recipe for caudle, I will not say that we will try it, but I would be interested to hear it. We're happy to post a recipe because
it's interesting.
Sounds like
a hangover remedy.
I don't know. But
with everything that's in it, it's so gross. No.
So, Jamie, good on you for turning that caudle filth down. He snaps at Claire and then apologizes and says that his bowel is gripping. Diana writes, quote, intimacy and romance are not synonymous, unquote. And he asks her to leave the room for a bit. So, basically, I think, if I remember correctly, he had kind of given her a little bit of a hint that his bowels were moving. He needed to.
Did you say griping or gripping?
Did I say griping?
You said gripping.
Gripping.
Is it gripping in the book?
You can check it, but I think it's gripping. You're gonna. Okay, then.
I read it as gripping in my head.
Griping actually would sound better, but I think it was gripping. It's possible my brain added another T. P.
Another T? Was it silent?
No, that would be Greek.
Is that griping?
It is griping. Okay.
And I would also like to know what a matin is.
Matin?
Matin.
Where?
Matins were sung.
It's one of the early, church hours. It's matin bells. Matin bells are ringing.
Nope, you just
That's
made
Christmas
that up.
Christmas bells are ringing.
I'm like, nope, you just made that up.
No, I did make that up, actually. Not the tune or the song, I just switched words. No, matins is one of the hour...
I'm just going to insert that into any random
matin
song.
Matin bells are ringing.
No, just matin bells. I'm going to just put matin
heard
in any other
in
song.
I in the Abbey.
No, matin bells, any song with bells in it needs to be immediately begun with matins from now on.
Matin bells Matin, literally in French, means morning. So it's one of the hours or offices of the hours of the church. There's Vespers, Matin, many more. So let's try that again. He snaps at Claire and then apologizes, saying his bowel is griping. Diana writes, quote, intimacy and romance are not synonymous. And he asks her to leave him alone for a bit. So he had kind of given
her a clue. And she immediately is like,
got it.
See ya.
See ya later.
That's all I'm going to say.
A bit later, she meets the man who'd helped Jamie the night before, Father François Anselme Mericourt d'Armagnac.
I knew you were going to do that.
Summer,
you can't help yourself.
I cannot help myself.
You can't.
With French and German, I'm fairly confident. Gaelic, not so much. And I think that's about it. We're not going to go through every language. For short, Diana calls him Father Anselme.
Yes.
And he was there to translate.
Which is the easiest of the four
of
names to pronounce.
Not really. François is a little easier than Anselme. Because is it Anselme, Anselme, Anselme? I can go on. He was there to translate several works by Herodotus. She goes with him to see the library and admires the stained glass parable of the flight into Egypt, which is a little bit interesting since they just had their flight, right?
Yes.
They leave the library and she asks him about perpetual adoration. They go for a walk and he tells her about it, using the story of Gethsemane, where Jesus...
The only reason I can pronounce that word
the song.
Is because of Jesus Christ Superstar.
I know, and we talked about that a number of episodes ago.
We did.
A lot.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, Cotter.
Summer.
Using the story of Gethsemane, where Jesus asked his disciples to stay awake for him for 1 hour, and they all fell asleep.
With him, not for him.
I said with
you
him.
You said for him. That's what you
for
typed,
one
but
hour.
You said for him.
For 1 hour. And they fell asleep. So Claire catches on and finishes, so that's what you're doing, watching with him for that hour to make up for it. Father Anselme says he chose 2 a.m. because it is as though, quote, time has stopped. And in that moment, anything is possible. This is a very touching time between Jamie and Claire. She nurses him and he feels very bad that he is disgusting to her. I'm sorry, Sasnach, I'm disgusting. She assures him that he isn't. That it's just his stomach.
I mean, that's the least of things that have been done to her. You know, I'm like,
he's
probably the hottest guy that's ever puked on her.
Well, we don't know who else has puked on her in the wartime, but to her, the hottest guy probably, yeah. She tells him of her day and that she'd finally met Brother Ambrose in the garden, who was taller than Jamie, which is saying a lot, right? Jamie's
6'4".
So he's 6'4".
Like Shaquille O'Neal?
No, because he's like cadaverous.
So like a cadaverous Shaquille O'Neal?
But white.
I know that.
Okay. When he's ready to try to get some sleep, he tells her of his dream. He'd dreamt of being flogged, and he tells her in detail of the continuous flogging, even as his back, arms, and hands, his entire body, became nothing but bone.
You know, when I read this, I don't know which description I think I hate more.
Bones?
This dream description
or the real one.
Or his retelling of what actually
which
happened.
Which is the next chapter.
Which is the next chapter, but... Both of those are, like, literally horrific to me.
I know.
Blech.
She offers to sleep on the floor to stay with him, and he says no. She has another chat with Father Anselme in the herbarium about the conditions necessary for the commission of sin. Then he invites her to join him for adoration that evening, or really, I guess, the next morning. They go, and she asks him, "What shall I do?" He answers, "Nothing, only be." This is one of the most beautiful parts of all of Diana's books. I can only speak for myself. Claire's time before the Blessed Sacrament. She ponders love, life, her youth with Uncle Lamb, her two husbands, and a place where anything is possible. Her uncle had never spoken to her of love, but she knew he loved her. Quote, I knew he loved me as surely as I knew I lived. For where all love is, the speaking is unnecessary. It is all. It is undying. And it is enough. She is startled by Father Anselme's approach and says that she thought he had been sitting behind her.
Well, because he came in from the front.
Yes.
And the last time she'd had any inkling of where he was,
he had moved behind her.
He told her, sit there in front. Yeah. I'm going to sit here behind you. And then he at some point got up and left. And all of a sudden, when he comes back, he doesn't come back from the back of the chapel. He comes in from the front. I would have been freaked out, too.
She says, you left? I thought you weren't supposed to leave the sacrament alone. And he says, I didn't, ma chère. You were there. Diana writes, I suppressed the urge to argue that I didn't count. They walk toward Jamie's room, and Claire says that the time before the sacrament was restful. And she says that she wasn't alone either.
I've tried
so many times to meditate. Like, for real meditate. But I
cannot. I thought you were going to say sip before the blessed sacrament. Like, Summer, you've never seen the blessed sacrament.
No, I would, well, you may have I would seen think it, that this is a lot like meditating. Where you just kind of like... let go of everything else that's going on in your
not
life.
To be just kind of... I'm not trying to be disrespectful or blasphemous or anything, but yeah, it's... some people may do it with a focus.
Right.
But you can... I think the whole point he was trying to tell her is you don't have to think of anything.
Right.
You can zone out and allow something to come to you.
Right. And, okay, I'm really bad at meditating. Like, if I put my mind to
my
it...
my brain comes...
I'm constantly, like, going, da-da-da-da, what's for lunch? What did I have to eat last night? Oh, what did I leave the stove on? I mean, it's any number of things that I can't get my mind to.
Oh my gosh, is there something planned tonight that I didn't remember?
Right, I can't meditate to save my life. But I have found that I go to a lot of like functions that my daughter's involved in where I don't know anybody. So I spend a lot of time sitting by myself. For the most part, it's like athletic events that she does, like swim team.
Those are not entertaining.
No. Swim team or like basketball where I don't know anybody. And I'm not super... social in the way that I want to go and introduce myself to people I don't know. So I usually I'll go, and if she's not actively doing something, I just kind of find my own place to sit, and I kind of watch what's going on, but I also just kind of zone out in my head. And I find this chapter kind of speaks to me in that regard, because I find myself kind of doing that, where that's the closest I can come to meditating is when I'm sitting by myself. Like,
so Summer has to go to sports events where she knows children's sports events. Oh, that's a little creepy.
Children's sports events
preferably where she my knows
own. Your own preferably children's. My own children.
Got it.
Child.
Children's sports events where she knows no one.
Yes.
To meditate. That is very funny.
It's bizarre, but that's the only time I find myself like actually like clearing my mind and not judging what's coming in. Because you know,
no, I don't know. You zone out when I talk to you sometimes.
Two places I can now meditate that I can admit that I meditate is when Ginger is talking
meditating.
To me.
I think that's zoning. Come on now.
Zoning out is as close as I can come to meditating, and I will admit that. And that is chapter 38. The Abbey. Please join us back next week when we discuss chapter 39, entitled To Ransom a Man's Soul. And this may be one of the more difficult chapters we've had to discuss.
And difficult. A lot. It has a lot of Diana, not us, has a lot of description of what actually happened to Jamie through Jamie's words. There's no need to go into detail about what is there. The summary is Jamie describes XYZ.
It's true, and I just wanna put this out there briefly because I know that some people have, and I don't know where I read it, but I have read in the past some people who were kind of a little bit angry that they thought that the characters are homophobic.
Oh.
That because of the things that go on and this, that, and the other. But I don't think necessarily that it's homophobic in that way. It's just,
you mean Jamie's character?
Right.
Okay.
It's just, and the situation, like, it's not me saying that what happens is bad because it's a man and a man. What happens is bad because it is rape.
And abuse.
And abuse and torture. And that's why it's awful. It's not because it's a man and a man. So for me, this chapter is very hard because it is a man being abused and broken down to his basis form. I mean, he's just broken.
And we'll discuss this more when we do the actual read-along. But what Jamie describes is what happened to make that little tiny protected thing that he said in a few chapters ago, that the part of himself that was only for himself, his naked soul, or his soul, was laid bare, laid naked by all of the stuff that, by the experience,
right,
by the stuff that Randall had done. And not just Randall, that Jamie had done. I think that's the killer, I think. For him, it is the experience. It's not about homophobic or someone who is a homosexual. It is not about anything like that.
And they've said up and down, Six Ways to Tuesday, it's not that he's homosexual.
He's not homosexual.
He's a sadist. And he's an equal opportunity sadist.
That's true. And it has been said that he may be bisexual. But,
well, obviously.
Let's put it this way. He can find pleasure.
With a man or a woman, but there has to be pain. They have to be in pain.
He can find pleasure with either sex in the presence of pain,
torture,
blood, torture, etc.
All of it.
Yes. He fully could have, or would have, could have, excuse me, he fully would have raped Jenny.
He was going to.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He would have raped Jenny if...
If she hadn't been laughing.
If she hadn't realized
it. If she had accepted the abuse part of it and been...
Freaked out.
Freaked out and scared. Those were the things he feeds on. But she wasn't playing his game, which is why he was unable to rise to the occasion, if you will.
And so since the next chapter... Hopefully you guys will have read it. We do not sit and read entire chapters, obviously. I do try to do a somewhat detailed recounting of basics of the chapters. This one, it will be a little more basic than most, but we do hope to maybe have some support or assistance. Maybe, we'll see, by a few clips. Not of any of the descriptive parts, but of the touching, emotional, heartbreaking parts. I mean, the description is heartbreaking too, don't get me wrong. But
it's in different ways.
It is, yeah. It is that Jamie was abused, but it doesn't matter. It could have been a woman that had abused him. The point is, the reason he reacted the way he did to certain things when Claire, you know, this is totally in the next chapter, is not because Randall was a man, not because of that, but because he reacts to something Claire does, or a number of things Claire does, because of an association that was forced upon him through the experience. Oh my God,
come back next week. We'll discuss this in
full. See, we're already starting. Okay. So we look forward to next week. So thank you, as always, so much for joining us. Please listen back next week when we start, for real, not the teaser this time, for real, chapter 39. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
I dreamt it last night that my young